Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Hello and welcome back. It's Friday. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Man, week went by so fast. It's always a pleasure being with you, and I want to thank all of the great listeners that have been sending in emails. And again, please keep them up. I love hearing your feedback on the different shows, episodes, and topics that fascinate you. I'm also looking for more of your ideas on guests you'd like to hear on the show. That's how we get some of our most fascinating guests and learn about brand new topics that might have gone right past us. So please, if you have an idea, book, something you've seen, a documentary, an interview you've heard elsewhere, and you'd like us to investigate it, please send me any information you have to dave@darknessradio.com. We are going to talk to Paul and Ben Enno today. We are moving them out to next week. They had a conflict in scheduling, so we will be talking to them, I believe, on Tuesday of next week. Today joining us, though, we are lucky enough to have Chad and Alta Dillard joining us. They are alien abductees. They have had implants. They've had the entire gambit of activity happen, and they're here to chat with us. They've recently written a book about their experiences, Orbducted, in the French Quarter. They're back with us today. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate you being here.
Oh, thank you, Dave. Thanks for having us back. We're happy and really excited to talk about our new book, Orbducted.
Yes, thank you so much. It's an honor to hear your voice and to have the time with you. We're very grateful.
And our thoughts are with you and everyone in that area. I know you guys are expecting, or you're in the midst of a monster storm that's kind of pummeling your area. So we will, although we're recording this a day or so before the big stuff moves in, I'm keeping you in our thoughts and prayers for safety for you and all of your neighbors.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
All right. I have to ask, we've heard of abductions, Orbducted in the French Quarter. How do we even begin with this, guys? What is Orbducted?
Right. Well, if I may, I'll kind of frame this and have Chad actually explain to you where it came from. Chad and I are what I call arranged in 1990 in the South in Arkansas, Little Rock, Arkansas. We married a year later after meeting. We then moved, just to fast forward the story, to Louisiana in 1995. At that point, we're living in the outskirts of a small community that's a college community called Hammond, Louisiana. Excuse me. One evening, Chad and I decide we have no children. We decide to go into the small community and have dinner and drinks for the evening. We start our evening fairly early. The sun isn't quite set yet, so we've still got some light out. Chad's driving. I'm the only passenger in the car. We come around a bend of trees, and there is a supersized Walmart sitting on its parking lot. And as we come around this bend of trees, I saw it just in a flash because I turned my head away from it. It shocked me so intensely. It's hard to shock me silent, but it shocked me silent. There was an object in the sky that took up the sky. It was larger than the structure, the supersized Walmart, its parking lot, and its surrounding area. I'll have Chad describe to you, because he, driving the car, took that in much deeper than I did, because I was too busy staring at Chad in shock, praying that that wasn't there.
All right, yeah, Chad. Like, yeah, where do we go from here?
Yeah, like Alta said, this was, it was huge. It was, a mothership. I believe it was below cloud level. It looked fairly low to the ground, as large as it was, moving very slowly. Very dark, very flat, almost like a floating obelisk or the thing from, anyway, it was kind of a rectangle shape, black, couple of lights in the front, a couple of lights in the back, moving very slowly. I look up at it, Alta looks up at it, we both look at each other, glance back at it again just to reinforce what I saw, and it was like I focused right back on the road saying, okay, if I don't see it, it won't see me, right? If I just pretend it wasn't there, if I just pretend I didn't see it, it won't see me, and we'll just keep on going. And we went on to dinner that night. We never spoke about it. The only reason we spoke about it again is the next morning we either heard it on the radio or in the newspaper or something like that, and that other people had witnessed this also.
This happens to you, and were your worlds open to this possibility before this, or was this something that was completely shocking and not even of this realm of concept of belief for either one of you?
So in my case, the word shock is the absolute perfect word. I went into absolute shock. Prior to that experience, I had no interest at all in anything sci-fi, anything of that realm, whatever that realm is. I had no interest in it, which means I had no interest. So, but I will also mention very quickly, in my case again, excuse me, I'm 10 years older than Chad. I come from a reservation area of the Southwest, born in the 50s. My mother left that area when I was 6 months old, left my father and his people, if you will, and just took off on her own. And she claimed a few times throughout my childhood to a few people that she ever trusted, which were very few, she would say this incredible story. And when she would say it, I would become so embarrassed, I would just feel like crawling away. And I think oftentimes I did leave the room. Her words were, now, my mother has passed on, so there is no challenging anything that I'm saying to you for my sake or anyone else's. She would say that driving across the desert during daytime, me, I'm about 6 months old, so this makes it somewhere at the end of 57, 58, a metallic craft, small metallic craft came down out of the sky, and she claims landed on the road and stopped her. Now, again, such incredible kinds of words that I right. never wanted to ever think about it again. So I never knew any more than that. But in my case, in seeing this, whatever this is in the sky, I went into pure shock. And Chad?
Yeah. Brain explodes, but, again, never any interest beforehand.
Okay, well, let's start to examine the rest of this. You have these experiences. How does it go from witnessing something to abduction? At what point do you realize that there's more to the story for both of you, and that this wasn't just a sighting, something that could be mistaken from a distance, but that your lives have been forever altered by this?
So again, immediately the next morning after our experience of this object in the sky, having to hear against our will, others had witnessed this as well. Neither one of us could ever forget that. But again, we never spoke about it. But again, neither of us could forget that. So now we'll fast forward within a very short amount of time of us having that encounter in the night sky. we decide to move to the French Quarter. The French Quarter is, I'm guesstimating, about an hour away from where we were living. We relocate ourselves to the French Quarter, again, reminding all we had no children. And the French Quarter is a world within itself, absolutely a world within itself. And I admit it, that Chad and I were both extremely naive when we moved to the Quarter. So that's a good thing, and that's maybe not such a good thing. So we began having to really start from the beginning, if you will, our lives. It was much more expensive than we ever anticipated. We were not prepared for that. So we start off kind of on the outskirts of the Quarter. Moving through that very quickly, we end up moving into a small apartment above what is known here as the authentic Voodoo Temple. It has a huge courtyard, I think the largest at the time. It has a priestess who lives in the courtyard in another structure. It has several apartments, efficiency apartments, that were original slave quarters that had been converted into these adorable little, if there can be such a thing, efficiency apartments. Chad and I had an apartment right above this other structure that's known as the temple. There was another apartment. We're on the second floor. There's another apartment next to us, and then the temple below. From the moment we moved into there, we start having very, I borrowed the term years and years ago of high strangeness, and it applies to everything that I refer to in the world of paranormal or weird or strange.
Right.
Our high strangeness began immediately. In dealing with ghost, I use the word ghosties. I've tried to kind of baby up some of the language to take the scary out of all of
right.
this. So ghosties and time slips and what always appeared, and still to this day to me, my experience of what I call a Virgin Mary-like type of apparition, very bizarre happenings on this location, in this property. Any movie through Hollywood or what have you that was made that had anything to do with voodoo seemed to be contracted with our location, so we dealt with that as well. Trying to get in and out of our apartment with movie sets and all the cameras and little actors and so on. And so, again, here's Chad and I, very naive. We had no interest in any of this. Fascinated, but I'm Indian, American Indian, in the sense that I am mixed. But my mother always made sure I knew who I was in this regards. I've always had my regalia. I'm a traditional dancer and have been throughout my life. And so it's a world that I'm much more connected to and familiar with, even though I've been removed from the tribes, if you will, and kind of raised around the world. So we're fascinated with all of this, but we just have no interest in it. And these experiences that both Chad and I are having together and separately, I feel are truly preparing us for now what others are all calling the main event in our lives, but we consider our 27 years together a main event because it started from the very beginning in 1990. But in regards to what this book has been written about, abducted in the French Quarter, because Chad and I have never used the language of abducted. We've never referred to, I've never used the word aliens or even ETs in my experience. Others use the language and, you know, we comply. But we've always been very consistent with, you know, knowing, in my case specifically, I know nothing. I understand none of this. So what happens is, and I'm about to hand the phone to Chad to have him describe to you literally where the word was created from. In our case, specifically about our, what I call night of missing time. So this is in 1997.
Let me ask you real quickly before you pass it on to Chad here. Why are you so reticent to label what the experience was or who was involved in the experience? Aliens, you know, UFOs, abduction. Why hold off on that aspect of the story?
In my case in particular, because I never asked and they never told. So
So I didn't ask you can't, where I it's was. Not like you can say, yes, we're from Venus, we're here, we've right. traversed the galaxy to come see you. You don't know if these are creatures that are maybe here on Earth hidden. You don't know if these are creatures from alternate dimensions. You don't know if these are creatures from outer space. So you're, that's why you're holding off on giving a final judgment on what your exact experience was and with whom.
That was so perfect. I could have never said it better, and I thank you so much.
Well, I'll need $2 every time you use that again going
absolutely.
Forward in the future. So.
Well earned, sir. Well earned. Absolutely. Again, everybody else has, and more power to them, everyone else that has learned about us, if you will, have their language attributed to us, but I've been consistent from day one, which is I don't know. I don't know. I absolutely don't know. For folks who think it's all airy-fairy coming out of the way that they hear us, if anybody has ever heard us, that's absolutely not the case at all. And there's much more in that little book that is that, you know, that we have just now started trying to make public of the beginning of our story, where folks can learn very quickly. Nothing airy-fairy about any of this. This has been mind-blowing. And it continues to be. And so objectively, again, just using language that feels comfortable for me on a personal level, which is, I don't know. And so interested in others that are out there that could be experiencing, because I realize how difficult it is for any of us to come forward. Chad and I have gone through tremendous abuse by coming forward. And so...
abuse
again,
from
we're
who?
Not naive. Well, you know, lots of folks who are positive that we're making it up, or that we are, that we were drugged this particular evening that we're getting to, you know, that this is fantasy, or this is, lots of different kinds of comments that have just been interesting and, In the early stages, hurtful, not near as hurtful any longer, because we've had to stand our ground on moving forward with this. And I might just add very quickly again, if I might, thank you for this time. We would have never gone public from the beginning of this ever, but there were three of us on that particular night that we're getting to, that this happened to. And when I started years ago, just what I felt was trying to find help, I'm not even sure for what anymore, but just trying to get some understanding about what in the world is happening to us and why. Well, that just, it just was not to be had. So we were asked to go public on a particular show and several years ago, and we agreed to it and just kind of have been moving along since then. Just trying to share what has been happening with us.
Now that you've come forward, even though it was with some trepidation at the beginning, are you glad that you have, even though you've taken some abuse and anger on this, do you see the importance of this to others that have had similar situations?
Absolutely. In this regards, absolutely, because there are many people that we have managed to meet independently, cross-country, if you will, for the last several years, who have made it very clear that there is no one. And you're, sir, I've had the pleasure of listening to you for a long time, you know, in your shows, and you're very aware, and you seem extremely interested in people's behavior and how people are treated, the fairness of it all. And, you know, there are just so many people that we know have used language like suicidal because they had nowhere to turn, or their own families, you know, expecting they're going to be taken off to a white jacket crazy house. So they stay silent. So, yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you, first of all, for the very kind words of support. I'm glad that you're able to find comfort in A, listening, and being able to share your stories and help others realize they're not mental, that
right.
they did have these experiences, because it does take a lot of bravery to do what you're doing because of how cruel people can be, especially people that just can't understand or wrap their head around what your experience was really like. All right. Or abducted. This is, this is the topic. Let's, and you said you were going to turn this over to Chad to kind of explain how this this title came to you and why we're looking at it this way.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, after our experience in the French Quarter, a few years later, I had regression done. And in my regression, my first memory is the three of us standing on this, in this stoop on this corner of the French Quarter. And, I remember seeing this bright light coming from around the corner. So I get the girl's attention, you know, cause by this time it's like 11 o'clock at night. So it's kind of got, it's dark. And I get the girl's attention. We walk around the corner and we see this orb, and it's probably 12 foot in diameter. It's about 15 foot off the ground, off the street. It's about a half a block down the street, and it comes towards us and just engulfs us. So, you know, we were kind of taken by this orb. So, you know, instead of abducted or anything like that, we went with orbducted.
And this experience, I mean, walk people through this that have never had an experience like this and are fascinated by people that have. This orb connects with you. What happens? What is that physical and emotional feel at that moment?
Yeah, it was just kind of like, it's just really, it was really hard to explain. I don't remember a lot of that part. My next memory is I'm walking down this corridor, and it's very metallic, the walls and the floors, no rivets, no bolts, no seams, you know, very smooth. There's a being in front of me. There's someone walking beside me. A tall blonde female. This does describe our friend that was with us, but I didn't turn to look to see if it was actually her. This being that was in front of us was probably 3 to 4 foot tall, big bulbous head. I only saw him from behind. He had substance to him. He kind of waddled when he walked. He was kind of dwarfish. And, I remember following him down this hallway. My next memory is I'm in this room that just seemed infinite. It was very, very dark. I could never, you know, I couldn't see the walls, but it just felt huge. Off in a distance
and,
to and my left.
You're remembering and recording the imagery that you're seeing, but do you recall the sensations and the emotions that you were going through during this experience as well?
Yeah, the only thing I can remember is when it made contact with this, is that this orb made contact with this. It was just kind of like a swooshing feeling, you know, like, I don't know, it almost not like when you get dizzy or something, but almost that sensation, you know, how your body reacts. Is it just kind of, I don't know, it's just really hard to explain.
How did you feel emotionally?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear. Was Alta speaking there? It sounded like she was, but I couldn't hear what she was saying.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to help Chad in the background here, because what I heard you asking him is his emotional feelings.
Right. As you're having this regression and you're seeing these things, are you having emotion with them? Or is it just like you're like, this is an everyday occurrence kind of feel?
Oh, no, I was kind of elated. There wasn't a lot. It was almost a kind of, I don't want to say in a zombie state, but kind of just, yeah, no emotion, no, I was totally relaxed. No, I didn't have an adrenaline rush or anything like that. I wasn't scared. You know, I was very calm.
And you saw the people you were there with. Were you witnessing anyone else, any other beings aside from this one creature, or were you, just walk us through that entire experience, if you would.
Okay. Yeah. My next memory is I'm in, in this large room. Off to the left of me, I could see a tall blonde female laying on an examining table. There were three beings around her, very tall, kind of buggish looking, with their, big eyes. They were wearing these long cloaks, kind of praying mantis-y looking. The person on the table never seemed to be in distress. I focused my attention back to my right, and there's this blue being, and his presence, his aura, seemed to be that of like a teacher, shaman, professor, just high intelligence in healing energy. He goes over and he picks up this box and he brings it over closer to me. He's got it in his right hand. He takes his left hand and puts it into the box. And when he pulls his hand out, he's got this, there's this substance that's kind of free floating above his hand. It's probably about the size of a quarter or a half a dollar, but it's kind of, it's ballish, but it's kind of undulating. You can kind of see through it. It's about the, it's the same color of blue that he is. There's this, sparkly glitter kind of substance in it, floating around in it. He takes his right hand. I don't even remember him putting down the box, but apparently he sets the box down. Now he's only got four digits, so he brings his right hand up and has it kind of in front of this substance, and he's got his middle two fingers up, like almost in a peace sign, and his outer fingers folded in, kind of almost like depictions of Jesus or the saints. Or Buddha, when they go into meditation or prayer. And when he does this, the substance starts spinning. And the faster it spun, the blueness and the glittery stuff kind of dissipate out of it and kind of orbiting and rotating around it. And it starts slowing down. And when it got real slow, I could tell that it had turned into this double-pointed crystal, kind of a pyramid-shaped crystal. I remember thinking to him, kind of telepathically, I guess, why are you showing this to me? I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. I'm not an engineer. This is something very important. And he told me that I would know in time or when it's time.
When they're communicating with you, is this a form of telepathy, or are you hearing a physical voice being spoken?
Yeah, this was all in the head, all telepathically, all mental.
It's from their aspect. Are you speaking out loud, though? I would say we're so used to needing to hear ourselves speak and opening our mouths. Are you speaking normally and they're kind of transmitting the message to you, or are you kind of one with them in this telepathy?
It's kind of, it's a good question. It was almost like I just thought it and then he thought it back to me. Know, it was like I didn't even have to, before I could even say it out loud, you think things and then, before I could even say it out loud or whatever, he'd already answered my question.
Was that shocking to you that kind of communication was going on?
Yeah,
or is that just such a trivial part of the entire experience because of everything else you're going through?
Right. It was like there was no thought to it. It was like it was normal. Like okay, this is cool. This is good.
The whole period of this time away. Do you have any estimate of how long you think that you were actually with them?
No, I don't really know. my next memory is I'm in this other room, and there's three walls, two that are very straight, one concave. Again, the walls are very metallic-colored, metal-shaped, metal-colored, you know, no seams, no rivets or anything like that. I focus my attention to the long wall that's concave, and it's probably, you know, 15 foot long and probably, you know, 9-10 foot tall. And I get a little closer, and what I thought was a solid wall, I could see through it. You know, it was transparent, and I could see stars and planets, and, you know, it was like I was out in the galaxy. I'm sitting there for a second, kind of just in awe. All of a sudden, from my left comes this little craft just outside the wall, you know, maybe 6 foot at the most. And it goes past pretty fast. It stops, it comes back, and it's probably about 3 foot long, about 2 foot wide, kind of a rugby shape or football shaped craft. Had little metal wires and antennas and blinking lights kind of around it. I could feel intelligence coming out of it. It was almost like it did a double take, and it was like, you know, surprised to see me as I was it. And it sat there for, you know, 30, 45 seconds, probably at the most, and then shoots off. And my next memory is waking up the next morning in bed, and it was close to probably, I would say, 9 o'clock.
Did you have a sense of connectedness to Alta as well, or was this a completely separate experience focused on you?
Yeah, I'll just kind of pass this to Alta. You know, I never saw Alta in my experience.
Well, what drove you to have a regression to experience this again anyway?
Well, I wanted to find out what had happened. A lot of things happened with Alta. She kind of remembers an experience. So, you know, I wanted to find out what my experience and see if I could. I had gone by. It was a class at a library, and somebody was doing past life regression. I found out that I was I could easily do this, so we explored a little farther, and like a year or so later after that, we found someone that we were comfortable with, and we had her do my regression, you know, focusing on that night.
Now, Alta, talk to me a little bit about this. You have a different set of memories of what took place?
Right, so...
Do you believe that you were separated, I guess, is the main thing, or do you think that you were always with each other, you just were not aware of each other?
Certainly in my memory, we were separated. I mean separated. Because okay. Chad, in his regression, of course, and he is not positive that it's our friend with him, but he feels fairly strong that it is her. And again, just can't prove anything we're saying, period, much less, you know, the specifics of this, but this has been his thought all along, and certainly when I heard the regression, it makes sense to us, because in my experience, I'm the only one that I say lucky with a big laugh out of the three of us that I don't wake up the next morning. I come to, and I'm sitting straight up in my living room. I'm cross-legged, like Indian style, which is where, like, I'm sitting right now when I'm private, and I'm rubbing my arms. There's something in my upper arm that is getting my attention, but I don't stop. I'm just rubbing my arm. My eyes pop open. I'm in my living room, and I see the sun blaring through my window. My immediate, let me remind all of us of the word shock, is where is Chad and where is our friend? Oh, my God. Because, again, for anybody who's interested in our little book, the very beginning of that book will help people understand much more about my expression about my shock and fear and terror about where are they. And so from the beginning of Chad and my relationship. And so as I am scanning around with my eyes, not physically moving, but just my eyes, my head, I see a lump in my bed because I've got view of my bedroom. And the blankies are pulled up over the head. So all I can say is I'm praying at that moment that that lump is mine, as right. in Chad. Right? So
that lump is lovingly your man. I got you. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah. And instead of going and checking on the lump, I'm very close to our bathroom. I've got to figure out what the hay is in my arm. It feels like as I run my hand over it, you know, when you wake up and you rub your arms, this is what I'm doing. And as I'm rubbing my hand over it, I feel this very sharp, without pain, though, there's no pain to any of this, but a sharp, what felt like a cactus sticker, cactus okay. thorn, it's tiny, sticking out of my arm, in my upper arm. Again, I'm thinking, now, this is beyond creepy. What the hey? And how come there's no pain? What? So I go in the bathroom to find the tweezers to pull this whatever out of my arm. I do that. I pull this whatever, little teeny, less than eighth of an inch, with no exaggeration. What appears when I'm rubbing it as a solid, when it comes out of my arm between my fingers, this thing starts to dissolve. It becomes translucent and starts to, and now I'm beyond flipping out. I'm beyond flipping out. It's left a little teeny tiny hole. And I mean, teeny tiny. And I scrub my fingers till I think, literally, I've heard this before in the past, and I did it, till I think I'm going to bleed.
Right.
I want that off me. I just want that clear. I'm so flipping out. So then, at this point, I come out of the bathroom, and as I start to move towards the bedroom, my lump, thank goodness, is Chad, and he's awake now.
Okay.
And he's a skinny guy. You know, he's a very thin guy. So the fact that my comforter lumped him up even more gives me relief. And so he is walking towards me. I'm walking towards him. I'm stuttering, trying to say about this in my arm and that I've got this insane memory of last night. But how did we get home? And about that time, I'm waiting for him to give me all the answers. But I see in his face, he doesn't have any. He's lost and puzzled, and he's waiting for me to tell him something. So that starts the experience. There's much more to that, but in my experience the night before, it's 11 o'clock, filling in the blanks, kind of that Chad left out, just taking you straight into his regression about the word abduction. It's Chad and I and a friend/coworker of mine. And we're just going to spend the evening out having drinks and dinner. We're going to start at one end of the French Quarter and work ourselves across. Just to back up very quickly, the minute we step outside of our shop at 9:30 p.m., somewhere, you know, literally around that period of time, because she had to close up the shop. So that's why we know when we started the evening. None of us had any alcohol prior to this, nor drugs. The minute we step outside the shop, I very clearly remember indicating that it felt weird. The energy felt weird. Now, I don't walk around talking like that. I just don't.
Right.
But I did, because it did. And it felt Twilight Zone-y. That's the only way I know how to describe it, because there's no other words. We start down the famous Bourbon Street. Now, we're in the French Quarter, 24/7 party, never stops. Those bars don't close. Even in slow months, and this was a slow month, it was September, it's tourism from all over the world. Not this night, not on this night. To try to fast forward this story, we stopped at three different locations. And our first location was a place Chad had worked when we first moved to the quarter a couple years prior on Bourbon Street. He was an oyster shucker. He's an amazing oyster shucker. And, you know, this was his first job in this big well-known restaurant, club, bar, what have you. So we knew everybody. So we stopped there, and there's nobody. I mean, it's ghostly vacant. And then there's one person, happens to be friend of ours that also is a man of color, happens to be a black guy, who is also what is known as a Mardi Gras Indian. So he's managing this place. We're trying to figure out, where is everybody? There's no wait staff. There's no patrons. There's nobody. So he makes us a house drink. None of us drank it. Not because we didn't want to, necessarily. We were bored. It was like, where is everybody? So our night of being freaked started from the moment we walked out of the shop, way before we got to that club restaurant. We work ourselves across the quarter, like 13 blocks, and it's the same story in every location that we stop at. There's nobody. And so at the very end of the night, it's 11 o'clock. I just want to go home.
Right.
We're very bored. And then that's the last thing the three of us remember until that next morning. In my case, I have no memory of coming off that street at all. I have no memory of this orb that Chad speaks about.
So do you think that this, what you experienced, is the false memory, this going from bar to bar and location to location, and it's just dead, and then you go back home? Do you think that this was a supplanted memory?
Well, there's no way to say that that's not possible. That's the problem with this for us. In our case, in our honesty, we can't answer that. We can only, all we've ever done is repeat as we best understand it of what happened to us.
Right.
And I have an object in my upper arm, and I have another one in my arm as well from another experience.
We have to take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue with this experience, the aftermath. And how many times have our guests been abducted? We'll find out about that as we return to the best paranormal talk radio. And we've got a brand new session of Theater of the Mind coming up for you. The Implant, the true story of Harold Tucker. I live in a cabin in the woods in the Pacific Northwest, and have always and always will be an outdoorsman. I've read everything I could find on encounters with Bigfoot in our region and spoken to many of the old-timers that have claimed to have had run-ins with the big fella. You would think, with all the time I spend outdoors, I would have accidentally bumped into the guy by now. Well, I have never had any encounters with ghosts, Bigfoot, or anything to do with what people refer to as the paranormal. Not for lack of trying, just didn't seem to be a part of my experience in this lifetime. Well, that changed in 1998. I was settled in for the night, a Saturday as I recall. I'd spent the better part of the day outside chopping wood, cutting branches, and clearing some dead trees from my property, trying to clear a nice patch of sky out around my home so on beautiful nights I could enjoy a fire and cast my gaze into the wonder of the starry skies that wrap themselves so lovingly around this part of the country. Deep, rich black skies, sprinkled with twinkling wonder from faraway galaxies as far as the eye could see. I sat quietly, sipping some coffee, comforted by the crackling of the fire burning bright in my yard, my eyes focused into the night sky, breathing in the cool, crisp air, when I heard what sounded like someone or something walking around behind me in the woods. I turned slowly in my chair and waited for my eyes to adjust to the light difference. And then I let out with a bellow. Go on! Get on out of here! Go! I figured it would spook off whatever woodland creature was drawn to the charismatic light flickering through the heavily wooded area surrounding my house. I then saw what looked to be a few small outlines of kids running between the trees. I was put off. It was 9:30 at night, so not entirely too late for kids to be up, but it seemed much too late and dangerous to be screwing around in the woods without flashlights. I wasn't too concerned about being jumped, as I could tell by their size they were more than likely the 10 and 12-year-old that lived up the road from me. Hey, it's kind of late for you kids to be jerking around out here in the dark. Better get your butts home before I call your parents, I commanded. Well, with that, I could hear the two scramble off to God knows where. I was once again enveloped in the sounds of the woods. An owl hooted high from a tree perch, the fire crackling with the normal pops and hisses. But my two onlookers had fled. After another 30 minutes or so, I doused the fire with a bucket of water I kept on hand for just this purpose. I stomped on the still glowing embers to ensure the fire was safely out before retreating to the comfort of my home.
Once inside, I closed the heavily wooded door. I snapped the lock into place and slid the bolt lock to secure the door. I washed up, brushed my teeth, and climbed into bed. I wasn't there for more than about 5 to 10 minutes when I noticed lights, like large flashlight beams, bouncing around outside my windows, casting bizarre shadows across my room. Now, this continued for another 15 minutes or so, and I thought, well, enough is enough. These little brats need to go home. Then, I heard the sudden and alarming bang from my front door. Like something heavy and with purpose struck the door once. Then it came again, this time 3 hard crashes. Bang! 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 I stood up and I crossed the floor to my bedroom door, made my way across the living room, and waited to hear who or what was going on outside.
Who's there? I yelled. You damn kids better go home, or I'm going to be calling your parents.
Then, to my surprise, another 2 bangs shook the door.
Bang! Bang!
I stepped back in a state of confusion and shock. I was trying to figure out my next move when I saw the doorknob begin to jiggle and with utter amazement watched the small handle lock slowly turn itself to the unlocked position. Then the door rattled in its frame as something pushed against the door again. I was baffled as how they had unlocked the door. Then remembered the extra key I kept under the milk can on my front porch. Stupid. That's what I thought to myself. I have to hide that damn thing better. Then my heart stopped as I stood there, watching as the bolt lock on the inside began to slide to the unlocked position. I recall thinking through how they unlocked the handle with the extra key, but this made no sense. The doorknob began to turn, and I stood there frozen, unsure whether to run or stand my ground. The handle popped, and the door was ready to be open. Then there was silence. A silence I did not like at all. I readied myself to run at the intruder to take them off guard when they opened the door. Then all at once it happened. The door swung wide open and my room was filled with a bright light and a very loud crackling noise. Then I felt something hit me and everything went black as I fell to the floor. I awoke a few hours later, stiff and sore and presumably in the same fashion I had fallen unconscious, crumpled in a heap on the floor. To my surprise, the door was closed, the handle was locked, and the latch was again closed from the inside. Now, I did a quick scan of my home, walking room to room, lighting each room up as I entered them, and found no one there and nothing out of place. I couldn't begin to even comprehend how this happened. That's when I reached up and rubbed my aching head, and I found a strange bump. I headed to the bathroom to assess the damage and found a raised bump on my forehead above my left eyebrow. I reached up to poke at it with my finger just to measure the wound, and as my finger approached it, the damn thing moved. I must have hit myself really good. I swore I saw the bump move slightly to avoid my prodding. What in the hell? I tried again and it shifted back to its original spot. I finally outsmarted the bump and placed fingers on each side like I was preparing to pop a zit, and I felt a vibration under the skin. Something hard, something was right there. It felt thick, like a long grain piece of rice. I squeezed and it buzzed and my head began sweating like I was on fire. The vibration was harsh and I continued to squeeze harder. Then something long and dark began to emerge from the middle of the bump. I grabbed the tweezers off the bathroom sink and quickly clamped down on it. I gave a short, hard pull and it burst out of the bump in my forehead, and I was sent quickly down to my knees. The pain was unreal, searing, throbbing from the lump on my head, and I heard this loud, ear-piercing squeal fill the air. I slammed my hands to my ears to cut off the sound, and it finally subsided. I searched the ground near the tweezers for whatever had popped out. I searched and searched. I eventually grabbed my vacuum cleaner, popped in a fresh bag, and slowly, methodically began sweeping the floor with it, waiting to hear something or to investigate the bag after a full cleaning. Then I heard the ping, like a bobby pin being grabbed by the vacuum. Ah, success. Then the vacuum let out a horrendous grinding noise and stopped. I flicked the switch, turned it off, fearful that I was going to burn the motor out. I turned the machine to its side and sought the culprit causing the noise. There it was, lodged in the roller like a metal thorn. I gave it a yank and was surprised to feel it vibrating between my fingers. I grabbed a pill bottle out of my medicine cabinet and poured the pills onto the counter. I crammed the item into the bottle and screwed the top back into place. Then, I gave the container a shake and I could see it bounce around inside the plastic prison I had sent it to. My head was killing me, my body was sore, and I swallowed a handful of aspirin and climbed into bed to ride this headache out. I placed the container on the bedstand and fell quickly to sleep. When I woke in the morning, I sat up in wonder. Had I dreamt it all? My hand moving over my forehead to find the small knot still there and tender to the touch. Well, I thought, at least I got that part right. I turned to the place I had placed the bottle with the offending item in it, and it was missing. I looked everywhere, and after a few hours of confounded feelings, I decided to hop in the car to go to town to see the doc and get myself checked. When I opened the door and crossed the porch, I found the pill bottle that I had used to contain the implant laying there, discarded. The top was off and thrown 2 feet further. I snapped the bottle up, and it was empty. I dropped to my knees and looked everywhere, and it was nowhere to be found. I have no idea what the hell happened to me that night. I never saw the lights or the childlike beings again anywhere near my property. It wasn't until months later, when sitting at a local dive bar with some regulars, that I heard the conversation about the night a few months ago that they had seen strange lights in the sky. They began to describe the area, and it was right near my property. They described large triangle craft that from time to time would emit light beams, large bright light beams, straight down to the ground. Then after a bit, they just seemed to take off and they've never been seen again.
Beyond the Darkness.
We're back onto the show here. This is the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio, and today we're talking with Chad and Alta Dillard. They have had a remarkable experience. So now Chad, he had this experience that he believes he was on some sort of craft, some kind of interstellar or intergalactic craft, and could see the heavens. Your experience slightly different, well, considerably different, I guess. You felt like 1 second you're there, the next second you're standing on a crater on the moon watching this unfold almost like a black and white movie playing out in front of you. What happened to your friend? What is her story like?
Right. So our next encounter with her was 2 days following that night of missing time.
Oh, that's right, because you both woke up back at home. You both came to conscious at home, so you started the night with this woman, ended the night back at home, but no idea what happened to her between that moment and 2 days later.
Exactly.
Okay, it now, happened- were you in a panic? Were you calling her, or had you almost forgotten that she was there?
Right, never forgot, okay. Never. And we were in a terrible. We were in a controlled internal panic and fear, immense fear, because again, Chad and I, without sounding so cryptid, Chad and I, in the beginning of our relationship, had a horrendous experience happen to us involving the loss of a friend. And it's very horrendous. Okay. And so here we are now, these many years later, 7 years later, and our friend and my coworker, the manager of the shop that I was connected to, is now out of sight, certainly not out of mind. We're now debating back and forth. You call her. No, you call her. And we're like kids, like teenagers, but so beyond the emotion of concern and fear and just trauma. So we ultimately, with no book of rules, please, folks, anybody listening to this, just know no book of rules. We are experiencing what we're experiencing. We never left our home. We lived at this stage of this event, we had moved in the heart of the quarter. We lived in one of these very elegant townhouses in the balconies that you see on television, if you see anything about the quarter. We were living a very nice life and comfortable until this happened. And so now we're just, as they say, hunkered down because we have no idea what is happening to us. And so I happened to be off work for that next couple of days. She did also, strangely enough. We got reconnected at work. When we got reconnected, now please keep in mind also, at the time she was 24, Chad was 30, and I was the old girl of the crowd. I was 40. So I try to deal with some of that kind of concept of how she could have taken 2 days and not made contact with us. We know why, what stopped us, and that would certainly be understood if anybody is interested in our lives, what's been going on with Chad and I. But in her case, I had to write that off to her being, and she basically indicated it was her youth. She knew something had happened to her, but she absolutely could not wrap her brain around it. And what happened to her is she remembers being on that corner just like Chad and I. Now, the last thing she remembers, it's around 11 o'clock collectively. All three of us remember this collectively. She then, the next thing she knows, it's somewhere between 3 and 4 the next morning. Now, everything in between she indicates is missing. There's nothing there. It's blank. It's like it's been wiped blank. But the next thing she knows, she's behind the steering wheel of her moving car. It's moving slowly. She hit a parked car and knocked off her rear view mirror. And this is what jolted her too. Now, without that in itself being beyond creepy, she's also in a whole nother section of the city from where she parked her car that morning, the morning before. It's well over 20 miles away from where she'd parked or somewhere in that range. It's a long distance from where she had parked her car that morning. So there's much more to that story as well, following that story and previous to what I've just shared with you about her recall to us.
I would guess, is she, you know, being in that area, the French Quarter, and planning on going out to drink and have fun for the evening, and knowing that there are things like drugs and roofies and things being slipped into drinks, was there ever a concern on her part that maybe she had been illegally doped or drugged?
She's never indicated that, because I've certainly asked, and we're still connected all these years later. Okay. This particular event happened in 1997. And as I said, we're still connected. But just to give you a little better idea about her personality, at 24, she was a no mess around kind of gal. She very attractive, an amazing laugh, very joyous, very serious, no BSer, no exaggerator, who then went on after this experience happened with us to then. Now she's had. Let me offer this to you. She had had, just prior to this event happening to the three of us, a personal experience dealing with what she calls a wolf man. A wolf man in New Orleans. You know, the stuff they make movies about.
I would try to sound surprised, but I've heard many of these stories already from friends like Dark Waters and other investigators about these wolfman creatures that seem to be around the French Quarter and throughout Louisiana.
Well, what's interesting in this particular case, and we love listening to Dark Waters and the connection there. It's so grateful that he's expressing, you know, what he is offering about what he's discovered going on here. In this particular case, if I might just mention, she at the time is 24, as I said, never married, no kids. She's dating a guy that I call Dark Boy. I gave him that little title because I was a lot older and I could do that and get away with it. He was quite adorable, but he was her polar opposite. She's tall, slender, long blonde hair. He's, you know, cute enough, long dark hair. But he had a darkness about him that I just, so I called him Dark Boy. Now, she only dated him a minute. And when she decided that that had been long enough, she wanted to be cordial about it. So she invited him over to her apartment. Daytime. This is daytime. She does this outside on the porch. And the it she does is the I like your butt kind of story to him. She says that he's only a couple inches in front of her face. And she says that as she's telling him that, you know, I like your butt, I kind of want to see other folks or whatever.
Right.
She says he becomes so emotional, like shaking from the inside out, that she said he turned into a wolf. She said her head turned away instantly, just like my head did when I saw that floating city, something in the sky years prior. She did the exact same thing, and I knew exactly what she was saying when she shared this with me. Now, I feel that she told me that truth, Chad and I, me in particular, because I'm mixed Indian from Arizona. That's the only thing that makes sense to me, because this is not something she goes around and advertises. She has chosen to stay quiet about all of this because she went on to have a life, and she knew that this was not going to correlate with the life she had planned. So she says
all right, she opens up to you about this, and having Native American heritage, is this a surprise to you, or does this even sound like, oh, this is way too sci-fi weird for me at this point?
Oh, I will say this to you. I am so godsmacked I can't see straight, because I've never had nothing like that. I've had a really weird life, but I've not seen a little boy shapeshift into a wolf. And when she shares this with me, there is no doubt to me she's telling me this because she trusts me. And also, my thoughts are, and I can only add my thoughts are, is possibly because of my native culture, I don't know. But I am godsmacked. And I know she's telling me her truth. And I'm hearing her truth. She said when her head snapped away, she looked right back at him. He had shifted back human and then shifted a second time right in front of her face. She said the second time he did it, she said in a very direct voice, and I'll clean the language up, you just turned into a F wolf. And she said that the look in his face told her she knew her truth, which was he was so startled when she said this to him that in a startled response, he said, you saw that? And then that was over. Now, if that's not all, just
holy cow.
Right.
What?
So that's where her car is going to.
Right.
Her car is heading to his house. And his house is not in a very nice neighborhood at 3-4 in the morning that a, you know, cute little blonde girl wants to be traipsing around in. She'd never intended to see him again. Mm-hmm. And especially after this and the way she expressed that to us. And so she says that the car, when it jolted her to, is heading in the direction of his house. And almost as creepy as it sounds, almost like it's got a mind of its own. Now, I'm not saying that she's not driving this car at this point.
Right.
I'm sure that she is. But this is beyond.
But she's running on motor memory doing this.
Totally.
Right.
She says she pulls up in front of this place. And again, you can't write a creepier movie. Just imagine the scenario of whatever you can imagine is what she's describing to us. She's not built like this. That's not her way.
Right.
She pulls up. She says this big house has been converted into apartments. It's not in a nice neighborhood. It's got a huge iron gate around it that's always closed and generally locked. Well, of course, not this morning. It's open. She says she gets out of her car. She goes up the steps. She says that he's sitting right inside the front door, and I guess it's a screen door, and he's sitting under a lamp or a light, an overhead light. And she says he's playing guitar. And then she says he stops playing guitar, looks right at her, and he says, again, creepy, either we've been waiting for you or I've been waiting for you. I'm sorry, it's 20 years later and not
How dare
absolute.
You not have a better memory for that? Come on.
You know, and I'll tell you, it's very irritating, as hard as I've tried, because I've worked hard to just hang on to every word, just because it's so creepy. She says he puts his guitar down, he stands up, she says she immediately starts to become unglued emotionally. She becomes somewhat a controlled hysterical. She said he wraps his arms around her. He guides her into a room. Now, let me also offer this, and Chad's right here acknowledging, she's not a crier.
Okay.
I don't remember ever seeing her cry. I'm a crier. I cry at a drop of anything, not her. She then says he guides her and lays her down on whatever he lays her down on, and apparently lays down next to her. She said she cries herself to sleep. She says it's probably only an hour or so later, because the sun is just starting to raise. And this is somewhere between 4 in the morning when she hits that parked car. So she says her eyes open up. She wakes up. She said she's dressed. He has apparently not done anything to her that she's aware of. She said she gets up and she gets the flock, changing the language, gets the flock out of Dodge and never looks back. Now, if I may, just to finish the creepiness of this story about her.
No, we don't have time for that. Of course. Yeah, please.
It's just, again, the very tail end about this little creepy wolfy boy, Will. Okay, now this happens to us in 97, the three of us. If we can now fast forward to 2001, Chad and I have and we're very honest to admit this, we imploded. We just started falling apart with each other and eventually had a separation. Chad left and went to work for his father in Alabama. I stayed behind in the French Quarter. I started coming apart. We both did. But I continued to work and tried to hang on and maintain an existence. But it was very difficult. One afternoon when Chad and I had separated, it's 2001 now, I'm walking through the quarter and I'm off work, and it's a beautiful afternoon, unlike most of the weather here, and lots of people out strolling. And all of a sudden I hear somebody yelling my name, and Alta is an unusual name, so you know I heard it.
Right.
It's a guy I hadn't seen in several years. This guy, we knew him when we first moved to the quarter, like in 1995. We hadn't seen him in, you know, 3 or 4 years. He's an artist who happens to be originally from Montauk, New York.
Okay.
Right. You know, and just all my years.
Synchronicity, sure.
To me, certainly. But I didn't understand back in the days of meeting him in 95, 96, none of that. Because I didn't care about anything prior to really what was then happening to us after 97. Well, anyhow, so this guy's an artist, a very good artist, who just makes his way, you know, as lots of struggling artists do. He's comes and goes. Well, he happens to be returning. He hollers at me. So nice to see him. He's extremely tall. When I say tall, I mean close to 7 foot, and with no exaggeration, and very thin. So just makes him even taller. So we stop to have a drink. He orders a Coke. I might have ordered a beer. We sit long enough for not even to, I don't even, again, once again, don't even remember really having the drink. He smokes a cigarette. He rolls a cigarette. He smokes it. And in that time it takes him kind of to do that, we're trying to play fast catch up. He learns Chad and I have separated. He's very upset to hear this. Nobody could imagine, because that's just not like us. And he then, all of a sudden, goes from our little personal conversation to, hey, have you heard about Will? I'm like, Will? Dark Boy? How do you know him? And what do you mean, have I heard about him? Now, again, this is so out of character. This is so weird. But now I'm not thinking Twilight Zone at this point. I'm just thinking, what the? This is weird. And so he then informs me. I'm like, no, do tell. Like, I don't know that I want to hear about him. And he says, yeah, he says, he told everybody he had to get out of town. He was catching a bus out of town because the aliens were after him. Now, when he used that word with me, I just knew I didn't want to talk to him anymore. I knew that our conversation had come to an end. And I felt like, where are the cameras? This has got to be some really bizarre, creepy, candid camera. Because it was, you know, the final say about this dark boy, this wolfy boy. Now the word aliens is being used with his, you know, same sentence as his name. So that's our friend's
wow.
version. Now, our friend went on to right. College and has got a degree in environmental science. She appears to have no interest, or at least in the sense of exploring it necessarily, about what one might say out there, or who knows, because she is so committed to the physical earth that, but now again, she's not foolish in any way at all. She, soon after our experience in 97, within the year, she had a child, And so she has worked diligently, from our understanding, of giving this child an amazing life. And as a role model and so on, and seems to be in the child's youth, we were long distance at this point from her. And she indicated there was a period of time that she would contact us and we'd have some conversations that she said seemed to be, I'd express to her some of the things that were happening to us separated from her, you know, long distance. There were times that she would share that she felt that her child, as a little one, was experiencing or having some of the same kind of dreams as we were. So that started to really open me up to the real possibility that this is much more than somebody slipping a roofie to us on a crazy night in the French Quarter.
Well, and the fact that you woke up with these implants, did she wake up with one of these as well? Has she ever looked, or have you spoken to her about it?
To the best of our knowledge, neither her or Chad. Again, lucky me, I get to come back with this insane memory of in between and this object. I refer to them as unknowns. And the only reason I do that, because you've been so kind to even care as to why I use the language I do or Chad uses the language he does, is that in my case in particular, is the only one out of the three of us of that event that has this object that we're aware of, I have no memory of it being implanted. Huh. So what I've always postulated, and I just try to get people to possibly open up their minds further than thinking they might know something, is how do we know it didn't come with a package? How do I know that I'm not born with this? And, you know, I just don't know these things. I don't know because, again, I have no memory of it.
Well, did you end up connecting with Lear or anybody else to discuss what you had gone through and the implant or the biological offset that you had? I mean, I don't know what the correct term would be for that, though.
Right. You know, I just always use the word unknown. But implant, you know, because it's comfortable for everyone else. So right. I try not to be argumentative about any of it. Just offering my thoughts about this. And yes, back in 2002, I made contact with, at that time, not realizing that they had sort of parted of ways, Daryl Sims and Dr. Lear. They used to be partners to some degree, I understand, in all of this originally, and then they parted ways, and I managed to catch them both at the same time of them parting ways, which wasn't good timing on my part. Dr. Lear, long distance, of course, indicated for us to have any conversation, I had to get x-rays, absolutely. That's worthy of a book all in itself about those x-rays.
Okay. Can you give us a little taste of that just so we have an idea?
Right. So a group in the state we were living in Alabama at the time, several years ago, we're talking 2001, 2002, an ex-member of MUFON was highly respected in the state, had found a doctor, a medical doctor, apparently at a conference, or he found, the doctor found them, whatever the case was. And the doctor made it clear, and I'm putting it in my language, if you ever get a real one or a live one, I'd be willing to look at them. Meaning if anybody ever comes along that claims they've got these implants, bring them to me. Well, that's just better than better, one would think. So lucky me, lucky Chad, not. We agreed to drive 2 hours to this doctor's office in the middle of no man's land, Alabama, a dry community, which means highly religious. This doctor made it very clear he wanted nobody to know about this. He was going to keep a skeleton staff, meaning an x-ray tech and his probably office manager or nurse, I'm not sure, let everyone else go by the time we were to get there to get these x-rays. Very bizarre, the whole event. But again, I'm very appreciative. We're both very appreciative because Lear makes it clear he will not speak to us any further till I get those x-rays. So keeping that all in mind, this is via Dr. Lear. This doctor, there's a lot to the story. The short version is the object chose to not take a picture the first two times. It wouldn't allow a photo of itself till the third time. The first two times I would get a skeletal x-ray of my arm, and the object was missing. Well, the problem we have here is that whatever this is in my arm is just underneath the top layer of skin. You can clearly feel it. You can sometimes, a lot of times it stands out in my arm like a big bug bite, a big lump, or small lump, however you perceive it. So it took three times. Now that's the first go around of those x-rays. They didn't want to deal with me anymore. They just wanted us out. They gave me the x-ray. They refused money. They just wanted me gone. As Chad and I are driving home those 2 hours, I tell Chad, we've got a problem, Chad. What in the hell is going on? Because I've already gone through all this trauma, both of him and I. We get the x-ray sent to Dr. Lear long distance. Dr. Lear makes it clear that I've got to get a second x-ray to alleviate artifacts. I tell Dr. Lear in a very short message, oh, dear Dr. Lear, you have no idea what we've been put through. Can you give us, Chad saying we just scared the doctor to death, can you give us further guidance? And he offered no other guidance other than I had to get that second x-ray. I tell Chad, please call the doctor, Chad, the office, and make arrangements for us to come back to get the second x-ray. Chad says, that doesn't sound like a good idea. They're afraid of us. And Chad doesn't talk that way, but he was very aware that we had a problem. And so I insisted. I said, Chad, you're the man. You call that office and you make that appointment, because if we don't do this, Dr. Lear won't work with us. Chad finally conceded to it. He called because he's a nice, good husband. And whoever answered the doctor's phone, the receptionist, his manager, whoever it was, indicated to Chad that that doctor was out of the country. Now, again, admitting my bad behavior, because our behavior, I would never do this again because I have so learned from these experiences. But again, no book of rules. I'm enraged at this point that I'm being treated like this, and Chad, that we're all being treated like this. I call the ex-MUFON member that had been the director. I tell this person what we're being put through. That person's embarrassed. She's angry. She says, I'll meet you at that office. I tell her, we're going to show him a peaceful Indian sit-in. And I mean it. Now, I've never acted this way before or since. Chad doesn't want to do this. We're lovers, not fighters. But I'm going to get that x-ray. We go back. This woman meets us there. She has to drive an hour and a half. We had to drive 2 hours. And this doctor made us wait over 8 hours. He made us wait. He hid. Again, these are the shortened versions of what I was put through, what both of us were put through, just getting the x-rays. By the time I finally got the second x-ray, Dr. Lear was no longer interested in talking to us. So, in essence, it was all for naught. but I have the x-rays.
This is something that's right in his wheelhouse. Why do you think that... I'm sorry, my microphone keeps cutting in and out on me. I'm sorry. This is right in his wheelhouse. Why do you think that Roger Lear would suddenly have no interest in this?
You know, I'd like to just kind of move around that. We understand something that we've never been public about in terms of, you know, his experience with us. What we understand is, and again, just kind of the peripheral of this, is when I got that second x-ray, we had discovered that he was to be a head speaker, a main speaker at a small conference in Tennessee. Travis Walton was going to be there. I was very interested in meeting Walton because, as I mentioned, I am mixed Indian from Arizona. On my father's side, I had inherited property that I no longer have, but I discovered that that property is up in the territory that Travis was taken from, up in those woods. So also from my understanding of Travis's experience, he was with blonde beings, so was I. So I was very interested in meeting him. That hasn't gone in the direction we thought it would either. But in regards to Dr. Lear, he was to be the head speaker at this conference. So it was a double whammy for Chad and I. We'd never been to one before. It was in Tennessee. At the time, we were in Alabama, fairly close. We were driving. I was just too excited for all of our good because when we got there, before we left for the conference, we got a message from Dr. Lear. Dr. Lear had been dropped from the speaker's podium, and he was very upset. And so needless to say, he wasn't going to be there and was no longer working with us, which it's been that kind of bizarreness for us from the beginning.
Yeah, that's unusual. All right. Getting back to your stories, and I know our time's running short here. What is your takeaway from all of this between the two of you? Why you? Why did this happen? And what do you think you're meant to know about this?
So I'll just lead off and then hand to Chad. If I might also add, just for the to contemplate, just like we've been left with, when Chad and I are first arranged in 1990, we discover within 24 hours of that high strangeness that Chad's grandfather, who had just passed on, I think, a year or so or a few years prior to me meeting Chad, the grandfather, the world knew him as George. The reality is that the grandfather, and on his headstone, at his on his gravestone, is his birth name, and his birth name is Alta. Of course, that's my name. Now, his last name and my mother's are the same. And just from the jump, what are the odds? What are the odds?
Now, I have to ask. The first time you mentioned it, I let it pass and just moved on with the conversation. But because you brought it up twice now, I know my listeners will be beating me over the head for not asking. When you say that you and Chad were arranged, what does that mean?
Right. So it was on a Valentine's Day, 1990. I'm 33 at the time, never married, no kids prior. Wasn't particularly interested. Chad was 23 at the time, no marriage prior, no kids. Somebody at a job that I didn't like at all, the job I didn't like, it was a new job. I hated it, and I was pretty frumped. It was Valentine's Day. I didn't have a date. I wasn't seeing anybody, and I was just in a very poor mood. This coworker, this guy, called this guy up on the phone and decided he was going to arrange me on a blind date. I'd never been on one of those either before and didn't like the idea. But then now I'm kind of flattered, so I'm stuck in my thoughts. This guy doesn't care. He calls this person up. He tries to make these arrangements. The guy sounds very interested in meeting me, but he can't that night because he has to work. So at this point now, I can't get a blind date, and I don't want a blind date, and I'm just being just trouble. I decide to do something on that day I'd never done before, truly, which was go out and have a drink by myself and drive. I never, never would drive and drink. And never would I go anywhere by myself. I was not created that way. I had social friends that I always was with, not on this day. The night started very strange. There are two men that I meet that evening, early in the evening, that are beyond physically description of beauty. Beautiful men. They're beautiful. Physically beautiful. One's got blonde hair and one's got very dark hair. The blonde is wearing a very expensive bomber jacket, like a pilot. Come to find out, these two supposedly are from who knows where, because I never asked. The blonde indicates that he's the private pilot for the guy with the dark hair. Now, I meet these guys. They want to go to another location that's more lively. I pick a place I've never been to before and find out in the same thought, oh, these guys aren't from here. So I'm going to pick a location that's huge, that I know is busy, and it's in my mom's territory. My mother was a premise inspector for the city at the time, very politically involved. She's known as like a mama bear, mixed Indian kind of, you know, analogy. I picked this huge sports bar to go to, and I'd never been there before. We get over to this sports bar. I have no interest in these men. That doesn't make any sense on a physical level. Plus, they were very nice, so I'm just not interested. I call a girlfriend of mine that lives up the street from this location. I know she's single. She shows up before I can hang the phone up because I'm describing these guys to her. I remember introducing them and then leaving. I don't remember these guys' names or being even really friendly to them. I separate myself. My behavior is so out of characteristic for me. I separate myself from the familiar. I go across this bar, this huge sports bar, and I sit up at the bar. I start having conversation with the owner. I look like my mother. Everybody knew that I was her daughter if I told them of our connection. So we engage in conversation, and I'm just trying to get through the night. Again, Valentine's. Before Valentine's is over, before it's midnight, just like crazy Cinderella story, I'm in a foul, foul mood. I'm getting in the worst mood ever as the night is wearing on. All of a sudden, a very tall, slender, very polite young guy asks me if I want to go play pinball. Well, out of all the things in sports, that's the thing I hate the most. So I can't get it right. But I finally get over myself. I agree. We go play pinball. While we're playing pinball, we discover that we're the blind date that afternoon that couldn't happen. And now all of a sudden it's happening. Meaning, Chad had to work that night. He worked in an oyster bar. He worked where, you know, all the politicians hung out. Kind of a very funky, where all the, you know, we're talking Bill Clinton's and this kind of crowd sort of would hang as well as other people. So he's oyster shucking and working in this place and what have you. And they close it down. And the guys that Chad works with all say, you know, we're going to go to this sports bar. Chad had never been there before either. You want to tag along kind of. And Chad joins in just to go try to have some kind of a night that night.
Wow. And then Bear, talk about arrange. Right. That is like the universe forcing you two together.
That's
above
right.
High strangeness. We're literally up against the wall here. I've got to wrap up. But I know you're going to pass the phone on to Chad with this. But, yeah, what is the takeaway for both of you on this? What is it like to have this kind of experience and be sharing this? And how do these abductions, do these visitations continue? What can you guys give us as we part here?
Just very quickly, Chad's just handed it back to me, and then he will finish this. I promise he will. Chad has not had any objects in his body that he's aware of or experiences regarding that. I, on the other hand, once again, once we moved, Chad and I reunited in 2000. We split for 3 months in 2001. We reunited. I then left the French Quarter, and we moved to Alabama. While we're living in Alabama for about 11 years, I again have another experience where I'm taken out of bed, put in my backyard. I'm conscious. I'm not conscious to be taken out of bed, but I'm conscious in my backyard. At the end of that experience, my wrist exploded in what I call like a light bomb went off inside of it. It's like it exploded in the most beautiful light, but there was no pain at all. And then I'm put back in bed. I wake Chad up the next morning, and I'm positive I have another object in my wrist. He says, oh, that's nice. Like, you know, he's not going to call me a liar, but can't prove anything. Finally got an ultrasound done of my wrist, and there is an object there. So, you know, the experiences seem to be periodically still continuing.
Yeah, when we were driving through Mississippi one time, we had seen some crazy craft up there. Last year, we were up around Serpent Mound in Ohio, and we had another couple there with us, and there at the campground, and we were just watching things go across the sky all night long. It was a light show, and you know there was the night bugs and stuff flying around, but you could, if you really focused, you could tell that a lot, and the way that these things were flying across the sky, they could not have been satellite. They could not have been, you know, a bug or whatever. It was just
this went on for hours. A light show from horizon to horizon of the night sky.
I mean, they were zooming
for all four of us.
Why do you guys believe you're having these experiences and you dealt with this abduction? Do you have any takeaway from that?
I have none. Mine is zero.
I don't know why. I have no idea.
Well, please keep us in mind as your journey continues. I mean, we'd love to continue to hear about what's going on in your world. This is unbelievable. Abducted in the French Quarter. That is the name of the book. Chad and Alta Dillard are the authors and experiencers. We'll have some links up so you can find them and keep up with what they're doing. Thank you both for coming on and spending time with us this evening.
Well, again, thank you for having us back, and we enjoyed the conversation with you.
And we wish you, your family, and certainly to Mr. Tim, absolutely the quickest of healing, and we can't thank you enough for this time.
Thank you, and please be safe with this monster storm heading your way. We'll be keeping you all in our thoughts and prayers as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, that's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more Parashare and Supernatural news. I'm Dave Schrader, and you're listening to Beyond the Darkness.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.